Welcome back. You are listening to EAA Radio 1210 AM 100.7 FM and around the world on the web at airventure.org. This is Magneto Mel with Digital Dave.
I'm Digital Dave, and you're sounding fantastic this morning.
Well, I didn't get in at 3 o'clock this morning like I did yesterday.
Yeah, no, that was me.
that was you today.
Yeah.
Right. And we're sitting here speaking with Don Brown as part of our ATC Push to Talk Hour. And we've opened it up to callers, provided our technology can put them through.
Yeah, we'll just tighten a string on a Dixie cup and scream loud.
So right before we went to break, I had asked...
Give us a teaser.
Gave an acronym out there about the... We were talking about automated systems and replacing the human functions with a lot more automated and whatnot. And so I had a question about CPDLC, which is Controller Pilot Data Link Communications, which is a little bit different way to handle the communications between aircraft and pilots.
So we're actually talking essentially texting.
No, I think it's more of a one-to-one. I don't know if it's a text message.
It's like a lot of things. Printed email almost. It goes various in assorted ways. But anyhow, the technology.
It's data over voice.
Yes,
is what
it is. It is.
Right. So I'm going to have a keyboard. I'm going to say hello.
The world's worst. What do they call that? World's worst word processor. There in the cockpit.
It's going to be a cell phone. I'm going to be going. I'm trying to get to the E.
But anyway, it's an exciting technology. Getting it online and getting it to work is going to be kind of interesting. It's odd that you brought this up. You're stealing my show. I'll be giving a lecture on this in about another 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Well, this is already implemented all around Europe, is it?
Well, I don't believe so.
In various...
Now, most of the overseas traffic has some type of capability.
Okay.
I believe it's called FANS, is the system the United use. Here in America... American Airlines was trying to make it work they were kind of the test bed for it down in Miami. And I think they have since ceased working on this. Darren, correct me. Thank you for nodding. And but anyway, the slide, two slides I'm going to show with my show here just a little bit, it points to the promise of the technology. We actually did a experiment on it at Atlanta Center where they took real controllers, working their own airspace down in the simulation lab, and we had a test bed for data link, and it gave a program. I think it was supposed to be like 110% of what we normally run into Atlanta on one arrival sector going into Atlanta there, and they took the data off of all the tracks of the airplanes going in, and you could see from this slide, there's a great big holding pattern right in the middle of it. You see a couple of really huge zigzags trying to get the airplanes in trail going into Atlanta. Well, the next slide is of the exact same people working the exact same program, but they're using data link. There's no big zigzags, and there are no holding patterns. And that's the promise that it brings to air traffic control, is it lets you know how much time we're spending on the frequency, and I hesitate to call it a distraction, but it's a mental workload that it takes to talk on the frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can clear up the voice communications with data link, it has a huge potential in situations like that. I mean, and the airlines, of course, are crazy about it because they're not sitting there spinning in holding patterns, wasting their gas. Implementing it has been another problem. I don't know how many people in the system would have to have it before you would start seeing a return on the cost.
And you would need to have renovations on both the controller side and the aircraft side.
Yes, you're talking about a lot of equipment,
so
a lot of expense.
How likely is this that, you know, these experimentals, these vintage, you know, the 172 that's been rotting out on the ramp at the FBO since 1966 is going to...
I want that guy to call me because I'll buy it from you.
That's a microcosm of the problem with ATC technology, if you will. We take a lot of heat for having outdated technology. But then, you know, I'm still working DC-3s on the midnight shift, and there's still, you know, Twin Beaches flying. And if you look around here, there's airplanes a whole lot older than that flying.
Right.
And everybody has to be incorporated into the system a little bit.
And that's a financial consideration.
Yeah. But one other point before we get off of this that I'd like to make, we started off talking about phraseology and knowing when to talk and radio technique. and is the example I'm using in this show that I want to get across to everybody, is that this, the Holden patterns and the great big zigzags in the sky, the vectors for entrail spacing and whatnot, if we could just learn to communicate better, a lot of that will disappear.
By better, you mean quicker, concise, less time on the frequency.
I do. And basically, it comes down to standard phraseology and good radio technique.
Brief and thorough.
And it won't, if we're going to still be dependent on voice, and we will be, I predict at least for the next decade.
Well, I was going to ask you that, if you saw this as a replacement or a supplement to the current system.
I don't think it could ever replace voice transmissions. It could be a heck of a supplement.
Right.
And there are benefits to the system. But anyway, if we can have better, more concise communications, we will get rid of some of the Holden patterns, if not all of them. We will get rid of some of the vectors for entrail spacing.
But as devil's advocate, I argue that by using a data link system, you're not reducing workload, you're shifting it. Instead of spending all time on frequency, now the controller's spending all time on terminal, issuing data commands up to his aircraft.
Very much so. It's just that the process is much quicker.
And is it automated? Like there's a button that says hold, maintain, and you just type in a number?
It is. You know, it's a test system.
And,
and unfortunately, I wasn't part of the test. I just got the results. So I can't say what they had on
the
test.
Yeah, the actual mechanics.
But yes, that capability is obvious. You know, the technology's there that we can do it. I mean, you hit a climb button and you hit the 330 button, and that, you know, touch on the United data block. We have technology that's sophisticated. Whether we can implement it or not, that's another
thing. Well, another question comes to mind in human factors. Uh-huh. The foreign air carrier. Most people probably learn to speak and listen to a foreign language before they learn to read it.
Well, reading has a lot fewer ambiguities to it. You don't get the accents. You don't get all the deviations.
But you can get spelling. You know, there's a lot of, you know, words spell the same, sound mean different, things like that to confuse them.
That's a very good question. And I'll have to admit, I haven't thought about that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that we discovered in listening to all this, somebody else at CAMI had mentioned this to me, but we get so concerned about the twos and fours, getting confused with the twos and fours. But when we're speaking, we don't actually say climbing to 2,000. It's tuh. Climbing to 2,000 or leaving 8 for 4,000. Doesn't happen. It's 8 fur. 8 for 4,000. Listen to yourself. You don't actually say
is that,
4.
Is that the redneck communication?
No, this is standard. This is what it sounds like, climbing 8 to 2,000. So, you know, that becomes a different kind of ambiguity when you're trying to teach technology to recognize different pronunciations of the same word.
And they're going to have to come up with a whole new standard vocabulary.
And if I may throw it in right here, this is where I really love to zone in on phraseology, because it is so easy to talk like that. But it's not climbing to 2,000. It's a leaving of 1,000,
right.
Climbing to
exactly.
2,000.
Or climbing 2,000 without...
Oh, no, the 2 and the 4 is in there.
The 2 and the 4 is in there.
Mm-hmm. Certainly is.
Now my instructor beat that out.
Doesn't matter. I'm on cheap radio. I can't understand what they're saying anyway.
Trust me, if you'll read it, it's right there in the AIM. I've answered that question probably 100 times. And there's a lot of people that have been taught that.
Yeah.
And, again, back to the very beginning of it all, I think there really needs to be a big push industry-wide. I don't want the FAA to do it by itself, and certainly I don't want controllers trying to enforce it on a frequency. They don't want to get into that area. But we really need to work as an industry to start teaching the right things right up front. It is so much, you being in human factors will back me up on this, I'm sure. It is so much easier to learn it right the first time than it is to learn it wrong, go break all those bad habits, and then go back and relearn it.
Yeah, I won't only just back you up. It's actually impossible. And one of the things in the psychology of human factors is once you learn something one way, and anybody who's taken the fundamentals of instruction is also taught this in the you know, course of your training. Once you learn something one way, that is your template way of knowing it. And even if you learn a different way to do it, your mind will always pass through that first way first and go, okay, wait, and now we have an amendment and we go here.
Yep.
It's that quick, but when people regress, which is what happens in an emergency situation, sometimes you get stuck on that first way. So it's essential that you learn things properly the first way if it's going to be available to you in all scenarios.
Okay. One of the best things I ever read on that was non-aviation related, to show people how it works in all fields and whatnot. But they had this police force, and whoever was in charge of the shooting range was just adamant that they had to pick up their brass. So if you empty your automatic, as soon as your clip was empty, you had to pick down, stoop down, pick up your brass, because they didn't want brass laying around and whatnot. They found out, and it probably took 10 years for them to find it out, that they actually had a couple of guys in a shootout, and when their clip emptied, the gun came up, slide held back, they were bending down in the middle of a shootout to pick up their brass.
That's conditioning.
That's the way
it works. This is what happens. I actually have an aviation story on this. In the Korean War, our pilots, I forget what the aircraft was, but they were one after the other ejecting themselves from the cockpit in the heat of combat. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong with these people. You know, in effect, ditching hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment, because you eject out of a perfectly good airplane and that's gone. So they thought, well, something wrong with all these guys. Let's change our training and get some people in here that don't have psychological problems. So, you know, they got a whole new batch of people, made sure there wasn't any psychological problems, and once again, one after the other, without fail, every single one, in the heat of combat, was ejecting out of the cockpit. What happened, they found out after, is they had trained in this one series of aircraft, done all their training in that, and then when they came out of stateside and actually came to Korea, they were in a slightly different model, and they did a lot of review training, but they'd been stateside in this one, and then they trained once they got over in the newer aircraft, or the different version. Slight differences, even though they put hundreds of thousands more hours in the new aircraft than the first one they trained in, where the throttle was where the ejection button was on the new one, was where the throttle was on the old one. So they would go to reach for the throttle in the heat of combat to give themselves more power, and before they could think about it, they were out the top.
Yep.
And they were just gone.
Yeah, they can imagine. I pushed a firewall forward, and next thing I know, I'm floating around.
And they realized it mentally after, you know, as they were doing it, but because the heat of combat was going so much faster than that,
it's automatic.
Was going faster than that pass through that first template. And they had very few hours on that first trainer compared to the practice they got once they were there, but still, it regressed to that first knowledge. So it's essential to learn things right the first, including phraseology. And a lot of students think, well, I'm never going to fly for the airlines. I'm just doing this, you know, so I don't really need to function that well with communications. And instructors don't push it. And they really should.
Because the instructors are just as bad.
Yep. But like I say, it's got to be an industry-wide thing for a push on it.
Yeah.
And anyway, something needs to be done. I hope it comes around one day.
Well, I can tell you a goofy story. My instructor and I were doing takeoffs and landings at an uncontrolled airport. And you get on the Unicom and you say, blah, 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 in pattern, you know, whatever. And I would say, touch and go number one. Because I heard the guy in front of me say like something, and I just trailed on. And then we go around the next time, and I was like, touch and go number two. And finally, my instructor goes, what are you doing?
I see where this is going.
Yeah, I just kept adding. I was like, touch and go number eight. He's like, what the heck are you doing? And I'm not afraid of the radio.
Did you get yourself corrected?
Yes, I did.
to go along with that principle of what's first learned.
Yeah.
The most powerful force in the universe is monkey see, monkey do.
You got that right.
That's funny. It was the guy behind you doing a touch and go then on your behalf?
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm going to log that one, too. This is better than mine.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So is there anything else that you'd like to kind of wrap up the whole idea of safety and communications for people?
I would like to emphasize about using the radio, trying to be very concise and along those lines. I know it won't particularly be that popular, but the system is really pushed right now. I mean, it's pressed. Guys like me are retiring just fast as we can go.
Pulling the plug.
And it's leaving the ones behind quite short, and they're having the two trainees at the same time. by the way, pilots will be talking to a lot more trainee controllers these days.
And of course, they don't identify themselves as trainee
controllers. No, they don't
student
do that.
Pilots and trainee controllers. That would be an interesting combination.
But the sheer volume of requests that we're getting from all segments of aviation, if I could encourage people, please, a little temperance. The system is really pushed to its limits these days. And we know everybody wants to go direct to their destination, and we know everybody wants their filed altitude that they filed on their flight plan. I don't want to discourage anybody from talking on the radio when they need to talk. If you need to, please do. I mean, you got to get out of icing or whatever, the ride's bad, go ahead. Make your request. Try to do it by the book. Try to do it by phraseology. But some of the other requests that we're getting, they really need to disappear for a while.
And ultimately, I know one thing that people should know, just from my perspective, is that the controller isn't in charge of the flight. They are a tool for the pilot. You are ultimately PIC,
right?
And you have to make the decisions as to whether or not what the controller is requesting is safe for your operations. They're not in the aircraft with you.
There you go. And that is very, very true, and a lot of people do forget it.
Yeah, that's a cultural thing. You know, you're taught to listen to them and obey them, when in reality you're the final authority.
Right. So
that's the reason they call them instructions, not commands.
We recommend.
There you go.
Well, Don, it's been great having you in here today.
Thank you for having me, Mel.
This has been Don Brown, with retired from Atlanta Center. And you're listening to EAA Radio on 100.7 FM, 1210 AM, and around the world on airventure.org.